Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parent Factors with your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. Today, families are a lot different than they were in the past. So whether you have one child or you're part of a blended family, you can depend on Dr. John for weekly insights, answers, tips, and solutions. Now, the world of parenting is right at your fingertips. Here's Dr. John.
Many children today are labeled. They are labeled with maybe being a foster child or maybe being an adoptive child. Maybe they have ADHD. Maybe they have learning disabilities. Maybe they have reactive attachment disorder or RAD. Maybe they are a drug baby. Whatever it may be, there are labels. Perhaps one of the more, I should say, infamous labels or popular labels or one of the more well-known labels, how about that, is ADHD. What is ADHD, and is it being diagnosed enough or too much with our children in today's society? Our special guest today is Dr. Charles Wiener from the state of Massachusetts. Dr. Craig Wiener is the author of Parenting Your Child with ADHD, a no-nonsense guide for nurturing self-reliance and cooperation. He is also a therapist and works on the premise that ADHD behaviors increase in frequency due to reinforcement. Our special guest this week on Parent Factors with Dr. John, Dr. Craig, welcome to the program this week.
Pleasure to be here.
So, can I call you Dr. Craig or Craig? What do you prefer?
Oh, whatever you like is fine.
All right. Well, Craig, so the book Parenting a Child with ADHD, a No-Nonsense Guide for Nurturing Self-Reliance and Cooperation, you know, that's a book I wish I had myself as a former teacher of 20 years and as somebody who has had over 50 children come through my home through foster care or adoption, you know, I wonder if my wife and I have correctly diagnosed children with ADHD, especially in the classroom. You know, I get a lot of children. I've had a lot of children who have come through my classroom who have been diagnosed with that. So before we go any further, Craig, can you tell me and our listeners what really is ADHD? We hear it a lot. What is it?
Well, what it is, that's a category name for somebody who does hyperactive, distracted, or impulsive behaviors more than other persons of their similar age. So it's a descriptive label for somebody who's doing those behaviors. It doesn't tell you why they do those behaviors. It tells you that they qualify for this description.
No, ADHD has been something we hear more and more as the years go by. When did ADHD first come into the common language? When did we first see it start appearing in schools?
Well, it's been around for lots and lots of time. They just had different names for the category. They used to call it minimal brain dysfunction, or they always had kids. There's always been kids that have been rambunctious and class clowns and kids who seem to be risk takers and intrusive or not paying attention and kids who aren't managing their affairs without a lot of supervision. So it's increasing in frequency, of course, as all these diagnoses are increasing in frequency. A lot of it has to do with the schools need diagnoses to have special ed plans, so people have to have labels, and the labels also trigger medications. So if you have medications, you have to have labels, and people see it as a possible way to understand or explain their behavior, and everybody's looking for the reason why there's a problem, and it's a search for a reason. And with all the medicalization of psychology, the reason now is your brain is delayed compared to other people, and that's why you do these behaviors. That's according to the standard view, that the child's brain is somehow delayed.
Okay. So what causes that delay? What causes ADHD?
Well, that's the debate. Now, there's thousands of studies done by people who want to promote the view that ADHD is caused by the biology, but they're never possible to identify a biology that can predict who's going to get diagnosed with ADHD. So ultimately, the diagnosis just relies on other people's report of your behavior in relation to how well you meet the expectations of society and the people you live with. So it's really a conformity to the people's view of how you self-manage, how you organize, how you deal with your emotions, how motivated are you on your own. And all this is in relation to expected activities and achievements, because if you they don't really evaluate kids, or how do they do with their Pokemon cards, or if they're into professional wrestling, do they organize for that, or do they show different behaviors when they initiate and enjoy the activity, when the activity has to do with the history of being successful with the activity. So these are assessments of the child invariably in relation to what other people expect.
Now, Craig, I'm asking out of ignorance here, okay? But is ADHD in any relation at all to ADD?
Well, ADD is just the pattern of distractibility. More often the kid is spaced out or not participating, whereas ADHD is you have those behaviors, but you also have this notion of hyperactive behaviors, more intrusive behaviors, behaviors that have more to do with intense emotional reactions. The ADD kids are just non-participants more. They don't end up with higher rates of oppositional behaviors or conduct disorder. That's a whole. They want to kind of make two different diagnostic groups now, because the ADD kids factor out very differently in terms of what happens to them in life.
Craig, is there in society a quickness, or do people rush to sometimes slap on the ADHD label on a child simply because he may be overactive?
Well, that's if you look at it just as a descriptive term, then if the kid's overactive and he qualifies for the list of behaviors, then they qualify. There's no – either you qualify for the list or you don't qualify for the list. The problem is how to explain it. Like, how do you account for the kid being rambunctious or hyper? Now, kids are different activity levels even from birth. Parents know that kids behave differently. The problem is not all kids who are – crawling early and very active to end up with a diagnosis, but certainly if you're an active kid, it might be harder to socialize an active kid. You have to worry more about what they're going to touch or how dangerous things are going to get, because they're busy operating in the world. If a kid's placid and sitting there, then you have a different social pattern with the parent. So all this shapes over time between the interactions of the child and their environment over time. And that's the
Sure.
point I make in the book. It's a developmental trajectory that goes with kids who have health problems or motor problems or reading problems. These are kids that have a hard time succeeding in relation to the expectations of others. If they're active, some kids are more dominant than other kids. Those are harder kids to socialize if they're more dominant, more insistent upon getting what they want. Other kids are more scared. They might give in easier to limits. So it's different to socialize one kid after another. You've had so many kids go through your home, you know what this is all about.
Right, right. Now, Craig, is there a way to treat, is there a common way to treat ADHD?
Well, the common way, of course, is all these meds, which is you give a kid these stimulants, and it makes the kid more likely to focus their attention on the task in front of them. So they're less likely to be acting out, more immersed in what they do. Their productivity level goes up. And then if the parent gets stricter, then the kid gets dominated more by the parent, and then the kid's refusals to comply and conform lessen. But the problem with these interventions, which is the same as what you do for any institutional training, is that if you coerce the person more and medicate them more, you get these instant, quick results, but how effective is institutional socialization over time for people? Lots of people grow up with more stringent disciplines. They don't really learn to self-manage as much. They get more reliant on other people managing for them. So if the problem is they're not managing them for themselves, how do you develop that? Or you just assume they're unable to and you just you just do this recommended treatment, which is to oversee them more stringently. It gets you through each time, but I don't know if you end up, the long-term outcome isn't so great. The short-term outcome is okay, but the long-term outcome isn't so great.
Oh, so why is that? Why is the long-term outcome not so good?
Well, what happens if you put somebody in a jail? You've got them learning to conform, but do they necessarily learn to live in the world when they're not in the jail? Or you go to a weight loss place, or a substance abuse place, you learn to stop doing the behavior while you're there, but does it repeat when you go back home? How well do you learn to manage yourself without the overseeing? So I think what's better for parents to do is you presume that you could shape the child to self-manage, to learn to handle problems more maturely, to orient differently in terms of risk-taking, or how does the kid learn to motivate? That kid doesn't have a problem motivating when they're doing their hobbies, so why is it with just schoolwork or chores? It has to do with how the child is socializing in relation to chores and schoolwork. How successful do they feel, or what complications are occurring in relation to those activities?
So, Craig, what type of intervention then do you propose?
I propose an intervention that helps shape the same behaviors that occur when a child's doing something they initiate and enjoy. You want to help a child learn that there's a joy to cooperating and helping in the family because your relationships improve. It's fun to have a mutually caring relationship with somebody. You don't have to, if you're bribed to do it, that doesn't make any sense because you're not doing it for the relational pattern. You're doing it because you're going to get something. You're not really training the child to see the joys of being helpful and contributing to a group or the joys of learning and knowing things. It's not, you don't do it because you're going to get a prize. You do it because it's a wonderful way to improve your life, to know things and to be competent, and then to share that with others. You're trying to teach the kid just the way they don't need to be bribed to do their Pokemon cards. They just do it because it's an enjoyment to do it, or learn about professional wrestlers. These kids are doing all sorts of wonderful things when no one's forcing them to do it.
You know, Craig, you keep it's the second time I think you've mentioned professional wrestlers. I don't know if you're saying that because you know my past, or that's just...
Are you into that?
No, I used to do that, Craig. I used to do that as a career, actually.
There you go. So there's lots of kids that can list all the champions and what their matches are going to be and what their strengths are going to be. And if that's their hobby, they learn it pretty well.
I thought you were just taking a dig at me.
Oh, no. In fact, it comes as a complete surprise that you had that background.
Yeah, well, that was a fun time, a long time ago.
Okay.
So what are some of the benefits, Craig, of that way of treating ADHD? What are some of the benefits then?
For me, it's if you can avoid medications, why not avoid it? No one knows what really happens. Some people may not have any side effects. Some people may. It's not clear the long-term outcomes are really that great.
You mentioned medication, Craig. Let me ask it differently. Have children in the past been prescribed too much medication? We see, as a foster parent, I often see children coming to my home who are prescribed way too many psychotropic drugs. Does that happen in the past with children with ADHD?
I think that there's so much medication now. They give a medication, and then they have medications for the side effects, and then they have medications for... What ends up happening is the person gets more and more medicated over time and more under the belief system that they need medications to solve their problems. So medications are drugs. And if the benefits outweigh the harms, then so be it. But it has not been shown that over the long term the benefits are that great. I'd rather be more conservative and see if a parent can – I help parents understand – what's the advantage of doing these behaviors of acting silly or loud or flopping or being intrusive or provoking? I'm trying to help people understand these are interpersonal patterns that go with being reinforced. Right. They're not things that happen out of the blue. When the parent starts to learn about this, they can see the behaviors make much more sense and how they can shape the child to do very different kinds of behaviors. By not responding to the silly things and responding to other things like how well the child's competence, The child doesn't have to get attention by being silly or by taking a risk. The child can get attention by knowing things, by doing mature things, by doing helpful things. And it takes a while to learn to reshape the relationships that they have with their child. It's not a blame of a parent. It's saying the parents can be a change agent to help the child learn to do different behaviors.
I would agree. We're talking with Dr. Craig Wiener, author of Parenting Your Child with ADHD, A No-Nonsense Guide for Nurturing Self-Reliance and Cooperation. You're listening to Parent Factors with Dr. John. I'm your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. We'll be back after these messages.
Did you ever wish there was a manual for foster parents? Well, now there is. This manual is a comprehensive guide offering proven, friendly advice for novice and experienced parents alike. Distilling many years' experience into one book, U.S. foster and adoptive parent John DeGarmo combines his own hard-won wisdom with that of fellow foster parents. He describes what to expect from the process, how to access help and support, and how to ensure the best care for your child. The Foster Parenting Manual, available now in stores and at Amazon.com.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
You know, it is staggering to think that there are more than 500,000 children in the foster care system every single year. Half of these children stay in the foster care system and sadly never reunite with their families. Those who remain desperately need to know and feel love, unconditional love, just like the love that God gives us. They need a champion in their corner. They need someone to willingly intercede to love them and show them faith in action. My brand new book, Faith in Foster Care, How We Impact God's Kingdom, is filled with personal stories from my family and I, as well as other foster families, and is also full of scripture. Faith in Foster Care shows how you can practically and specifically live out your faith in the foster care ministry, because that's what it is, isn't it? A ministry, an encouraging resource for novice or experienced advocates and for parents. Specific issues addressed include how to be an effective advocate for children in foster care, how to maintain a healthy marriage as a foster parent, how to love the foster child and the biological families, how to pray for your foster child and their biological family members, and how to respond when the child leaves your home. See how your actions have a far-reaching impact on God's kingdom when you live out your faith. Just like Irene Clemens, the executive director of National Foster Parent Association, says, "Faith in Foster Care was a real shot in the arm for me as I read it and reflected on my years as a foster parent. Reading so many real-life anecdotes from others who shared so many of the same experiences as my family was a validation of our work, commitment, and role our faith played in everything we did as foster parents. This is a must-read book for foster parents and other caregivers. Faith in Foster Care, How We Impact God's Kingdom, available in bookstores, available on Amazon.com, and get a signed copy from me, the author, at my website.
Hey there, this is Barb Royal, founder of KidsCanGive2.com. We make it easy for kids to share half of their birthday money with a charity. You may have heard me on a recent Dr. John show chatting about the importance of teaching kids about giving and philanthropy. I get a lot of feedback from parents about KidsCanGive2.com, and the thing I hear them say the most is they love the opportunity to teach their kids a real-life lesson in giving. A Visa gift card, a charitable donation, and the lesson of a lifetime. Check it out at KidsCanGive2.com, and most importantly, set a reminder so your child can share their birthday with the charity of their choice.
And now back to Dr. John and Parent Factors.
And this is America's Parenting Show, Parent Factors with Dr. John. I'm your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. Our guest this week, Dr. Craig Wiener, author of Parenting Your Child with ADHD. We're learning a lot about ADHD this week. Craig, welcome back to the program.
Oh, hi.
So, Craig, what do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions about children with ADHD?
To me, it's a brain delay. It may be that people with brain delays are more likely to end up doing these behavior patterns, but the behaviors are reinforced over time, and it's these behaviors can be explained through psychology. They're not explained through neurology.
Okay. So how can parents stop unwittingly reinforce ADHD?
To start to pay attention to when the child behaves in this particular way, what happens?
Right.
If the child provokes or limit tests or any of those kind of, or is distracted when you're talking, what are they gaining from that behavior? It's not that they are planning it or may even know they're doing it. These are just automatic behaviors that have a sequence of events that reinforce their recurrence over time. So if the child, if you're talking on the phone and the child starts making a racket, what happens? You get off the phone and you give the child attention. So that reinforces the child to act out and make noise. And these things happen insidiously and unwittingly in very subtle ways. If the child is flopping and doing all the things that irritate the parent, then the parent reacts negatively, and then the parent's sorry, and the child's sorry, and then the child gets attention based on all the talking and making up that occurs after. It's just helping people look at what happens between them over time and what are the sequence of events, and then start to see, well, what can we do differently to change that? The problem is once you decide these things are a medical problem or a neurological problem, you stop examining the whole living in the world and the history of the child of living with other people, and that goes by the wayside, and that's what's happened. A lot of people just get told by the doctor very early the child has this problem. It's seen as a medical issue. They get put on meds, and no one examines the interaction patterns that could well explain how these behaviors occur so frequently across different settings and circumstances.
Craig, you know, a lot of times children go to school, children with ADHD struggle in school. How can parents help their child with ADHD adjust to a school day, to adjust to school in general?
Yeah, so school is one of the places where the child has to accommodate to what other people want.
Right.
And if the child has had trouble with that at home, they're more likely to have trouble with that at school. And if they have trouble learning for any number of reasons, or they don't feel socially included, or they feel inferior, or any number of things, you get the child's not going to fit in and be comfortable at school, and there's lots of reasons why they may not be achieving, succeeding, or participating. So you have to figure out what's going on with the particular child. And how can the child see the schoolwork as an opportunity to develop themselves and have skills just like they would something else? So rather than if you fuss with somebody, if a child wants to play the piano and then you start fussing about did you practice, after a while piano playing gets associated with criticism or coercion or some evaluation, and the child gets turned off in a very subtle, quiet way, and then the problem is the child no longer wants to play. So same thing happens with brushing their teeth or showering or any number of things, doing helpful things around the house. So these things schoolwork gets associated with something negative rather than something that's not so terrible. And even if it's not so greatly pleasurable, why can't we help the kid learn to just do it and not make such a crisis of existence about it? So you have to figure out what the child is having trouble with and why they're saying no to the schoolwork. It could be just because they're making a resistance and then they have to get the parent worried, and the parent's sits with them and helps them, so the child feels more loved and appreciated because the parent worries about their teeth or their schoolwork. It's any number of things that could be reinforcing a child in a particular family.
Now, Craig, why would the listener in this program want to pick up a copy of Parenting Your Child with ADHD? Who is this book for?
It's for parents who are interested in saying, I'd like to help my child stop doing ADHD behaviors and learn to be more self-reliant, to self-manage, to be more emotionally reasonable, to learn to talk out problems with the parent so that they can learn that instead of screaming and yelling and overreacting, that things can be discussed and some mutual arrangement can occur between the parent and the child so that the child learns how to be connected to the other people in their world. And this will help the child learn to be a good worker and a good spouse and a good friend to other people, because ultimately it's their connection with other people and their willingness to understand another person's perspective and to do caring behaviors that will help them succeed and be happy in the world. It's about the relationships that they develop.
Okay. Now, Craig, where can we find the book, Parenting a Child with ADHD? Where can we find it?
Well, of course, you can get it on all the websites on the Internet, you know, Amazon.com. As far as I know, every Barnes & Noble has a copy in the bookstore across the country. And so it's readily available any place they want.
And where can we find out, if people want to contact you, where can they find out more about you?
Well, I have a website. It's craigwiener.com, CraigWiener.com, craigwiener.com. And you can read a little bit about my work and see the three books I've written. I've written two academic books before I wrote this book for parents, essentially understanding ADHD from this perspective.
Craig, I've actually pulled up the Amazon review for it right now. You got lots and lots of 5 stars. It looks like a great book.
Well, I hope people enjoy it and it's helpful.
Craig, thanks so much for appearing on the show. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
The book is Parenting a Child with ADHD, A No-Nonsense Guide for Nurturing Self-Reliance and Cooperation. And our special guest has been Dr. Craig Wiener. Make sure you check out that book. I'm on the Amazon.com page myself right now as I speak to you, and you can order very easily there. Sounds like a book that any parent who has children struggling with ADHD certainly need to pick up. It might be a book for foster parents. It might be a book for adoptive parents. It might be a book for teachers and counselors. It sounds like this is a book that's going to have a far-reaching audience. You know, so many times children come into my home from the foster care system, and they are struggling with ADHD or ADD or RAD, RAD, or some other type of diagnosis. I have found, as a foster parent, as a biological parent, and I'll be honest with you, I'll be completely honest with you, I have some adoptive children who my wife and I are struggling with some of their birth-related issues. And I say birth-related issues due to some of the drugs that were in their system when their mothers were pregnant with these children. And I have found that the more knowledge I have, the easier it is to meet these challenges. The more knowledge I have, the more resources I have, the more tools I have to meet these challenges and to help the child, both in my home and in school, both in a social setting and when the child gets older, both how to treat the child ourselves or to help the child manage it. So the more skills, the more resources you have, the more information you have, the more books you have on that shelf, the more experience you have, the better you are going to be able to meet those challenges for the child, whether it's ADHD or some type of other challenge. Okay, we've had a great week here in Parent Batters with Dr. John. I'm so excited about the reception for my brand new book, Faith and Foster Care. Quite frankly, I have been signing copies left and right. They've been flying into my home and then flying right back out to you. So I want to thank all of you who have ordered that book, and I've also been signing lots of copies recently of my book, A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story. You can find those books. You can also find lots of articles, videos. You can find all of the archives of Parent Factors with Dr. John and the previous radio program, Foster Talk with Dr. John, on my website as well. Just Google Dr. John here, and you'll come up on my website, and you'll find the videos. You'll find the archives of this program where you can listen to Dr. Craig and other guests. You can find whole bunch of stuff. Of course, I'm on social media, Facebook and Twitter, and I'll be appearing on Atlanta Live TV this coming week as well and doing a book tour for my new book. All right, if you want to contact me, you can get me on Twitter. You can get me on Facebook. You can get me an email, drjohndegarmo@gmail.com. I'd love to. Well, next week, we got another exciting guest on Parent Factors with Dr. John. Remember, the more information you have as a parent, the better you are able to meet that child's needs. And a child needs stability, a child needs security, but what the child needs most is your love. I'm Dr. John DeGarmo for Parent Factors with Dr. John. We'll be back next week.